Consolidation Coal against the Director of the Office of Workers' Compensation Programs.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ms. Fisher. I represent Consolidation Coal Company in this case, which is a claim arising from the Black Lung Benefits Act. The issues on appeal all stem from the recently revived presumption, Section 1556 of the PPACA, which was previously found to be constitutional by this Court in the Keene case. The issues on review here involve the ALJ's use of the presumption to find a material change, or what used to be a material change in condition is now a change in condition of entitlement, as well as his analysis of the evidence and his eventual review of the rebuttal for that presumption. Mr. Bailey worked for Consol from April of 1969 until October of 1995 when he injured his back. He never returned to the mine following the back injury and eventually retired in June of 1997. Following his retirement, he filed two claims for benefits, one in 2000 and one in 2003, both of which were denied. He filed a third claim in 2006, which was withdrawn, and the claim at bar is his fourth claim, which is was filed in September of 2007. Due to the fact that Mr. Bailey's two prior claims from 2000 and 2003 were finally denied, it moves this claim. It basically becomes classified as a subsequent claim for benefits and triggers an initial review threshold under Section 725.309. As I said earlier, it used to be requiring a material change in condition. Now the statute requires a change in condition of entitlement. Essentially, the National Mining case that reviewed the amended regulations when they went in 2001 found this to be substantially the same thing as what this court found in Spies, which was requiring a one-element test to show that something in the miner's condition had worsened to basically move us beyond the problems with res judicata, since you can have more than one claim filed in these matters. The new regulation basically states that if the applicable condition of entitlement relates to the miner's physical condition, which is all it was in this one, the subsequent claim may be approved only if new evidence submitted in connection with the subsequent claim establishes at least one applicable change in entitlement. What happened in this case is, to go back to the one in 2000 and 2003, basically the district director's decisions found that he failed to prove that he had pneumoconiosis arising from his coal mine employment or that he was totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis. Both of the prior claims indicated findings of total disability based on his pulmonary function studies. So in order to make a change in condition of entitlement, he had to either prove he had pneumoconiosis, that he had pneumoconiosis arising out of his condition, or that his total disability was due to pneumoconiosis. In this case, instead of addressing each of those possible levels of entitlement, the ALJ used the recently revived presumption and said, well, he's totally disabled, which was nothing new from 2000 and 2003, and he worked in the mine for 28 years. He doesn't have a film for complicated coal workers' pneumoconiosis, and invoked the presumption to say he's now totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis, which were two of the elements that he didn't prove in his prior claim. It is our contention that reliance on the presumption is contrary to law. The regulation specifically says you need to prove it by new evidence, and there is nothing in the statute that says we're going to be using this presumption to make a change in a condition of entitlement. And when you look at the National Mining case and they discussed this, you know, these were things that their own language said, this is something the miner is going to have to prove. And certainly nothing is really being proven if all we're doing is invoking a presumption. And so the issue is, the first issue is a question of law. Basically, you know, when you look at the statute and you look at the regulation, is an ALJ allowed to make a finding of a change in condition of entitlement using that presumption? And we don't think that it should be. We have asked that question.
That's now the law, though. It wasn't before.
I'm sorry?
That is now the law, is it not?
Well, it is the law, but it is a law that is used for determining the entitlement based on the merits. This is a threshold requirement to be considered before you even get to the merits of the claim, which was to get rid of the problems associated with res judicata. And this case specifically indicates why we shouldn't be using the presumption. Basically, the two factors that he relies on are the same factors that were the same in 2000 and 2003. First, you know, even beyond that, when you look at this court's case law, when it talked about, you know, a substantial worsening in someone's condition, needs to be shown that something has changed since the final claim has been denied. That can't be shown. And it's worse in this case because the man's pulmonary function studies actually have improved since the prior filings. So everything that this court ever said...
Well, the medical opinions support the change in condition, do they not? The doctor's opinions of his condition...
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because the finding of total disability was based on the pulmonary function study evidence.
Well, it can be.
And those values improved.
It's based on both, as I understand it.
Well, I don't believe that that's how it's stated, but even for purposes of argument, even if they did, we then get into a quandary of if you can rely on this presumption to invoke a presumption of a change in condition of
entitlement. Well, that's outside of the presumption. The doctor's opinions don't rely on the presumption, I don't believe.
Well, and we don't believe that to find a change in condition of entitlement, you can rely on a presumption because the regulation...
Well, I'm asking you about this, the doctor's opinions was changed, did they not?
Well, there were different doctors. Basically, the first Dr. Eisenberg did the first set of the first DOL exam in 2000, and he put the disablement as mild. But the way that the form is written, it shows the part that's related to your coal dust. It's the total disability was still shown on the pulmonary function studies. When he was examined by Dr. Sanjabi in 2003, it was a moderate, I believe, and it was a moderate to severe in this one. But they base it on the amount that's attributable to your coal mining, not so much as a round thing, which is why the pulmonary function studies and the arterial blood gas testing is used in addition to medical evidence to show.
I'm now completely lost. The physicians found, and I thought even your own two physicians agreed, that the man is now totally disabled by a pulmonary condition.
They did, Your
Honor. That's what then sets up the 15-year presumption. The physicians don't have to agree on the cause in order to activate the presumption. They only have to find disability, and they did. Your own two experts found disability.
Right? But, so that's the same, but that's the same thing that he had in 2000 and 2003. We're not showing anything different. He was disabled in 2000 and 2003. Of course.
There's now a different law.
Well, okay, then we'll just say, fine, we can invoke the presumption.
Your argument is effectively that this law does not apply to older claims. And is there some language in it that you're relying on for that purpose?
Well, I don't understand. If the entire basis of finding a change in condition of entitlement
is... I take it, therefore, that your answer is no. I asked you about the language of the statute.
The language of the statute specifically requires new evidence to prove the condition, and new evidence isn't really being used if you're having the same conclusion that you had in two prior claims. If he was totally disabled in 2000, 2003, and he's still totally disabled in 2007, what have we proven? We're just going to invoke a presumption, and it's like if that's what they're going to do, then you know that's the first prong, and it seems to me that this court seems to have the view that they are allowed to rely on this presumption to find a condition and a changing condition of entitlement. The second question that then arises from that is the ALJ then required to consider rebuttal evidence with regard to invoking that presumption? Because if you're not going to review the rebuttal evidence at this stage, you are finding material change in condition based solely on a presumption, which becomes an irrebuttable presumption if you're not going to look at any rebuttal evidence.
What was the rebuttal evidence?
I'm sorry?
What was the rebuttal evidence?
The rebuttal evidence with regard to total disability, neither Dr. Tudor nor Dr. Westerfield found legal pneumoconiosis. Dr. Hauser did find that the condition was due to both coal dust and to smoking. So you have that prong to find a rebuttal. And then you also have a rebuttal standard which is a showing against total disability due to pneumoconiosis. And that wasn't analyzed by the ALJ ever. That wasn't even a prong. And this court has had case law for years saying, you know, this is something that's considered, you know, if they were able to work, was there something other than pneumoconiosis that caused them to leave the mine? All of these other standards come into play. But he didn't even bother to do rebuttal after he invoked the presumption. So if you're going to do that, then you've created an irrebuttable presumption. The second problem that we get into is this classification of legal pneumoconiosis. Because legal pneumoconiosis, when it was reviewed by the National Mining Court, specifically agreed with the Federal Register statement that said, this disease is not going to be presumed. And the whole underlying basis is this is something that the miner was going to have to prove. And the Tenth Circuit looked at this when they were addressing what was typically the second prong, which was the pneumoconiosis arising out of coal mine employment, and they found that legal pneumoconiosis could not be reconciled with the current use of pneumoconiosis in the 921 statute. Now, they were looking at 921C1, not 921C4, but pneumoconiosis in both of those is the same. And essentially, if you're going to presume there's a condition, there has to be something in the record to show that everybody is going to have that. And that was the problem, is there wasn't this. There were people who had obstructive conditions who worked in the coal mine, but they were not necessarily all arising just from the coal mine dust. And so we have asked the court to look at the Tenth Circuit's case in Anderson addressing this exception where they have said, no, we will not be presuming this, and realize that based on the Federal Register and the National Mining case, it shouldn't be presumed in any of these cases. And we've asked the court to look into that as well. Are there any other questions, Your Honors?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Fisher.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Maya Fisher, and I am counsel for the Director of the Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. The ALJ's award of benefits in this case should be affirmed for two simple reasons.
Could you raise your voice some, please?
Certainly. The ALJ's award of benefits should be affirmed in this case for two simple reasons. First, for a miner to prevail on a subsequent claim, he must establish a change in an element of entitlement previously decided against him. Second, the Black Lung Act and regulations specify that elements of entitlement, pneumoconiosis, and total disability due to pneumoconiosis can be established pursuant to the 15-year presumption. Here, the ALJ evaluated all the evidence in light of the law in effect at the time. He found that the new evidence established the miner was totally disabled, that he had worked in coal mine employment for over 15 years in conditions comparable to that of an underground mine, and that pursuant to the 15-year presumption, he was totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis. He therefore found the miner had established a change in an element of entitlement previously decided against him and went on to evaluate the case on the merits. His evaluation of the evidence yielded an award of benefits which is supported by substantial evidence and in accordance with law. I would like to address a few points that Counsel for Consolidation raised. There's no basis in law as to why the 15-year presumption cannot be used to establish a change in condition of entitlement. If you look at the Black Lung Act and regulations, the entire basis of this system is a requirement that the miner establish pneumoconiosis, that pneumoconiosis is due to coal mine employment, that he is totally disabled, and that total disability is due to pneumoconiosis. This burden, however, can be satisfied either through affirmative evidence or by presumption. Running through the Act are rebuttable presumptions and irrebuttable presumptions that can be used to establish these elements of entitlement. Specifically, in terms of establishing a change in an element of entitlement, cross-references throughout our regulations ensure that the 15-year presumption can be used. The subsequent claim regulation requires the change in an element of entitlement. It, in turn, points to the regulation outlining the requisite elements of entitlement. For a minor, that's 20 CFR 725.202D. That regulation, in turn, points to the regulations which explain how each element of entitlement can be established. In pointing to the pneumoconiosis regulation, that regulation allows the 15-year presumption to establish pneumoconiosis. The reference to the total disability causation regulation provides that total disability due to pneumoconiosis can also be established pursuant to the 15-year presumption. I'd also like to address counsel's assertion that substantial worsening is a requirement under the new regulation. That's not the case. This court's precedents all addressed the previous iteration of the subsequent claim regulation. The new regulation makes clear that in determining a change in element of entitlement, only new evidence can be evaluated. The legal conclusions in the previous denial are taken to be true. This is in order to preserve the finality of the previous decision. I'd also like to address counsel's assertion that an irrebuttable presumption was created in this case. Here, although the ALJ did not address the rebuttal evidence initially, he fully and thoroughly addressed the rebuttal evidence at the merit state of the evaluation, which means that it was certainly harmless error that he in sum, the ALJ was required to use the 15-year presumption. Congress has mandated that it applies to all claims filed after January 1st, 2005 that were pending on or March 23rd, 2010. And this court in Keene found such a use constitutional. Therefore, it was law in effect at the time and should have been used. Unless the court has any questions, we would rest on our briefs.
Mm-hmm. I see none. Thank you, Ms. Fisher. Anything further, Ms. Entrevive?
Just very briefly,
Ms. Fisher did a very good job of explaining how the interplay of some of these regulations. What this court needs to recognize is that not all of those regulations are applicable. In fact, the one that she was relying on most heavily, 305, has the last sentence that specifically stated this is not applicable to any claim filed after 1982. Clearly, we're after 1982. Second of all, Ms. Fisher stated that the ALJ thoroughly evaluated the evidence with regard to rebuttal evidence on the merits at the end. He did not do it with regard to the condition of entitlement, which is the second issue here. But even when he did it on the merits of the claim, he only evaluated with regard to legal pneumoconiosis. He did not evaluate it with regard to total disability due to pneumoconiosis. And under the regulations 204C, pneumoconiosis has to be a substantially contributing cause of the total disability. In this case, there is no evidence of any physician saying that Mr. Bailey's legal pneumoconiosis was a substantially contributing cause of his total disability. So basically, we're leaving the court with three questions of law to consider, the first being, can the presumption be used to invoke the change in conditional entitlement? The second question being, if it can, is the ALJ then required to review rebuttal of the evidence at that stage? That did not happen in this case. And the third question stems from the Tenth Circuit's case law from 2006 and 2009, where they specifically found that legal pneumoconiosis could not be considered presumed, because that's what National Mining and the Federal Register said, and therefore any presumption with regard to legal pneumoconiosis arising from coal dust would have to be proven by the miner. We would ask that legal pneumoconiosis also have the same view given by the Tenth Circuit, which would require a miner to prove legal pneumoconiosis, although there could be a presumption with regard to clinical pneumoconiosis. And those cases were Anderson versus Director and Energy West Mining Center versus Oliver, and those are both out of the Tenth Circuit, and they're noted in our briefs. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.